This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, September 22nd, the Norris Group proudly presented its 10th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. All proceeds from the event will benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not have been possible without the generous support of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Coach Fullerton, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club, Las Brisas Escrow, MVT Productions, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Realty 411, and White House Catering.
I can tell you why I own, and I knew for sure when I wrote that report called The California Crash, I really thought prices would go down by half. Did I sell my residence? No. It went from $1.2 million to $600,000. And the reason I kept it was because of a phone call I made trying to be a renter. I called a guy that had a really cool house. I said, I'm not your typical renter. I'll pay a year in advance. He said, everything sounds great. He says, can I ask you a question? And he said, do you have a pet? And the second he asked that question, I knew I couldn't be a renter because I don't want anybody ever to get to ask me that again. And it was worth $600,000 to say, I'm so glad you asked the question. So that's why I found I owned, I wanted control. And I think, I don't know, I don't want that to be not part of America, to be honest with you. It bothers me that we're not thinking. I think there's some negative ramifications, so let's talk about some of that. I think building equity is important because it's usable for entrepreneurship. I don't know how many of us had a house go up. First of all, your payment is fixed. I'm not trying to get on a soapbox here, but here I am. And I'm an investor.
How many people rent from you?
100% of them.
There you go.
It doesn't mean that I don't think they should own. I wish they had a chance. But I think that when people own, they get the payment fixed. To me, that's spendable income. I don't know if you remember your first house payment. You're going, $191. How am I ever going to make it? And then 4 years later, you go, my car payment's $230. My house payment's a joke. And all of a sudden, I've got equity. I can tap it. I can go be entrepreneurial. That's going to be missing for millions of people. I just don't think that's a good idea. Okay. One person like that. Thank you very much.
I was almost stuck on the pet thing, and then I was going to ask if you got your wife back from the FBI.
I was lucky I still had a wife, to be honest with you.
our survey shows that. To John's point, the younger population is definitely more financially conservative as a result of their observation of the crisis. However, they also ultimately want to own a home. But it's much more for the reason that you're talking about, which is that it's a place to raise a family, and it's more the attributes of ownership than it is the investment value. Although, if you look by age, when you ask the question, what do you think of housing as an investment value, they actually think it's the highest as an investment value than any of the age groups. Now, that's partly because the prices had gone way down, so that number is actually migrating now to where they're getting more realistic about where house prices have gone.
So, if we believe MBA statistics, and this is something I'm passionate about, I mentioned NAREP earlier. I just came from, that's the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals. I just came from their annual convention a couple of weeks ago in Dallas, and amazing. And if we believe MBA statistics, 65%+ of the borrowers going forward over the next 8 to 12 years are going to be Latino, 68%, and Asian American. So I was asked to speak at the convention on a DC update. I didn't do it. I talked to Gary about it, and I said, I just want to talk about real immigration reform. Because it's like Obamacare has failed. Immigration has failed. We need to embrace it and understand it. The old white guy sitting up here is the minority going forward as the home buyer. Familia is important to the Latino community. The hardest working, most patriotic people I've ever seen in my life desire to come here, born here, and own a home. So homeownership's going to go up. We don't have enough inventory for it, and we don't have the programs to finance these people because we can't verify their assets because it comes from grandmother and a mattress, wherever the hell it is. And guess what? They work hard, and I'm talking about they're Americans. And so we need to embrace that and think about it because it's here and it's a sea change coming, and that's where your next homeownership wave is coming from. So we better wake up.
Well, look, were you going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say, I don't know statistics, but from a shopping perspective, we just launched realestate.com under the Zillow Group family of brands, and it was basically built with the millennial in mind, and we focus less on the price of the house. Like, we don't put the price of the house forward, but the payment of the house forward. So we're helping consumers shop from kind of an affordability perspective versus solely looking at that price. And then translation was a big part of that build out. So with the click of the button, you can translate that into Mandarin or Spanish.
The three impediments. So let's talk now from the lending world's perspective. There's down payment, there's debt ratio, there's credit. Which one of those three could you safely play with and have still a successful loan portfolio that you're happy with? Could you do a nothing down loan program?
Yes. You could get rid of all three of them if prices were at the right level. In 2009, you could have made a loan to any homeless person and not lost a penny. What we have to stop doing is making loans when prices get out of whack, and we do exactly the opposite, right? So in 2009, we tightened up credit. You had to have 20% down, and you heard what he said. Was it, I don't know which one of you, but said, you know, now most loans are over 90% LTV. You know, when we're back up, getting up to a peak, we're doing it exactly backwards. We should have had the highest home ownership rate ever coming out of 2009, 2010, not the other way around.
But, okay, go.
So I remember getting asked in 2009 in congressional testimony and getting screamed at, Mr. Kittle, would you really make 100% mortgage? You've got to be kidding me. I said, absolutely, Senator. And I said, VA loan. Right?
That's right.
So why are VA loans historically the most or the best performing loans in a portfolio? And it's one reason and one reason only. They're 100% loans. There's no down payment. Anybody know what it is? Can anybody tell me in the audience? What is it? Say again? No. It's one thing in an underwriting guideline. It's called a residual income. So once you underwrite it, like you do a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac or an FHA loan, they have to have, after all you do, so much money left over to live on. Wow, isn't that just rocket science? So think about that just for a second. That has been there for decades. And we don't put that into the other loans we underwrite. It's called residual income. It's still there today. 100% loans perform great. It's not the down payment. It's whether or not you can make the payment and whether or not you have the historic income reserve and whether or not, you know, you're creditworthy. That's all it is. There's nothing wrong with low down payment loans if you can afford it. They're all good programs when made to the right people.
Okay.
And I'm running for Congress.
So when you're in charge of everything, then can we get a nothing down loan? I'm just curious.
Okay. What about combining something? I've suggested this before, and I've talked to you guys in front of audience, and I mentioned it to John Burns. Couldn't we create a hybrid if we think ownership's important? If we think, you know what, we're better off society-wise if 5% more own. Could we do a nothing-down loan program and combine it with two things? There used to be something called a simple assumption, to where the loan could move to somebody willing to make a payment.
FHA,
yeah. Correct, but no, it used to be simple. In other words,
right. Yeah.
I didn't have to fully qualify. I had to make the loan current at the end of escrow and send in $35, and there wasn't a foreclosure. Additionally, in allowing it to walk to another buyer, allow for a foreclosure to occur and the opening bid be only the back payments, to where the principal is never at risk, that you literally had an opening bid at $5,000 or something, and somebody could make it current and take it over. Why can't we do that? No, there wouldn't be no losses.
You know, I think part of the problem is just it's this institutional knowledge and this, you know, this sense that the things are the way they are. I mean, I see so many bad. There's a recent National Bureau of Economics research study, and it made me want to pound my head into a wall. It was just the assumptions were so bad. I think what's going to happen is we're going to move past loans and past transfers as we know them today. I think we'll see a completely new innovative product where it says, you own this home, but you own it like you own a share of a REIT. And you get, if your home, your share goes up in value, you get that value increase. But any day you feel like moving, move. And we'll put somebody else in that one. And we'll just trade shares.
Sounds like real estate Bitcoin or something.
I think it will. I think it'll be like the way to move past this is to stop thinking about the current solutions, right? The mortgage business has been around for so long. It's time for it just to go away completely.
Yeah, no offense.
I like when these two
think
get
about
together.
It. I mean, just whether it's blockchain or something else that says there's a completely, whether it's blockchain or something else, like we need to think about homeownership in a completely different way where there's a frictionless, you know, marketplace. Because the amount of friction, right? So you think about it, if I've given, you know, this property comes in, I've spent thousands of dollars on title insurance. Right? If it's not trading hands, really, it's staying within this thing. We don't need title insurance anymore. Sorry, title insurance companies. Right? But, I mean, like, everything could change. And I think for those that are in title insurance, those that are in lending, those that are in real estate, it's going to be something like that that disrupts everything.
I think Roofstock's trying to do that.
What? Okay, what is that?
Roofstock
yeah. is, yeah. So there are... There's folks around talking about this at the fringes.
Which is?
In Silicon Valley today.
Which is, I don't know what Roofstock is. It's
kind of another model like Open Door, except more your...
Like fractional ownership.
Fractional ownership?
Yeah.
Okay. Roofstock?
Roofstock, OfferPad, Open Door, Knock, you should be following all of those.
Okay.
I can't believe you don't know Roofstock, because Roofstock's an MLS for selling homes with tenants in them. So if you want to sell a home with your tenant in it, you go to Roofstock. You want to buy a home with a tenant in it, you go to Roofstock, and all the due diligence is laid out for you.
Maybe we interviewed them. I forgot. Yeah. I think we actually...
I told them to sponsor here, and they had something else going on.
Oh. Yeah, I guess that's over, huh?
Yeah, the
guy doesn't even know us. All right.
I'll be here.
I've got to ask this, and I didn't think I would be in any doubt about the answer, but now I am. Do you expect a downturn in real estate? Maybe I also this. Do you expect the next downturn in real estate to be mild or harsh? Anybody? And why?
Our view is that given that there is the supply problem that exists today, and we are late cycle, there will probably within the next, at least the next 24 to 36 months, there'll be another recession. But because of that supply shortage, housing is likely to return to its normal cyclical pattern, where it will actually lead us out of the recession. The question is how far unemployment goes. If unemployment only goes to, say, 7%, what you see is some easing off on price pressure, and you see rates are certainly not going to go up. They're going to go down. And so those 93% of households that are still employed, some of them will want to...
How far will it go down? We'll get to 2-something? Like the cover of this report?
Right.
Okay. Do you have an opinion of the next downturn?
We're running out of time.
Oh, no, we're not. I've got the clock.
I'll just say I don't think we're going to cause the next downturn. We'll just be impacted by it. And we did a deep dive on 20 industry sectors that might cause it. I think healthcare is massively overlevered, and healthcare is 17% of our economy. The stock market, actually, more people are borrowing money to buy stocks today than since 1929. The tech companies getting interrupted. The retail industry is getting disrupted. But all the issues are in publicly traded companies who went out to the bond market. There's no issues really with private companies who couldn't, because the banks have been pretty conservative. So we identified what risks are out there. And I think Doug hit the nail on the head. If we go to 6-7% unemployment, we'll be through it just fine. If we go to 10, it'll be ugly. But we'll be leading this out of it because we are going to need more construction because of the demographics. So I guess I waffled a lot there. But
Okay.
Our forecast is it won't be that bad is our best guess.
Okay. I mean, one of the reasons why I think it wouldn't be nearly as severe and maybe very mild, first of all, you will get an interest rate that's very reasonable. We have not pulled out equity this time, correct? And we've had this pretty good price increase, but it hasn't been our habit to borrow all the money out. It's still sitting there. And instead of having a variable loan a pretty high percentage of the time, whatever that is, we haven't gotten that loan. It's fixed, and it's fixed with a 3 or a 4. So I look at that and go, okay, I don't see... you're going to lose your job, and you're going to have some people lose their house. But that's not going to be a dominant percentage of what's available for sale in the next downturn, especially if we sort of kind of pre-played how we're going to handle people that can't make their payment this time, and I think we're going to treat them kindly.
The smartest thing to do for everybody is to just forbear their mortgage payment until they get a job back. I mean, everybody wins in that situation, so hopefully that's what people do.
What about, and just for the sake of argument, what about the ultimate investor in their forbearance?
Well, I think they'll lose less that way. I mean, how much did they lose when we threw them out of the house?
Well, I don't know. I get to the point, and this is a great debate here. I was raised, I guess I'm older than you, that if you sign the mortgage, it's yours, and if you can't pay for it, you lose it. And it's not the government's job to step in and help you out. And so there's some accountability in there, which we didn't have. We picked winners and losers in the meltdown. We let some fail, and we bailed others out that shouldn't have been bailed out. And we've got – Doug's been in conservatorship, not personally, for, 9 years now, right? And it was going to be temporary. And if we'd have left it alone and let them fail, they could have come out on their own 2 years earlier, and we wouldn't be in this mess today. So at some point, you've got to let it take its course. That's just my opinion.
No, I agree with that. But, I mean, if you're going to be running a $1.7 trillion mortgage pool, you may look at it and say, okay, I want to foreclose on this guy because he's not paying his job. But that might cost me $400 billion if I do that, and maybe if I can just hold on and help the guy till he gets his mortgage back, it only cost me $100 billion. That's a big difference.
That's a lot of ifs. I get that. I'm just talking about basic black and white what is right and what is wrong. To me,
I didn't say it was the right thing to do, not to violate a contract, but I did say it was an option that I think people learned. That if I'm the holder of that mortgage, I will get more of my principal back that way. That's all I said.
And actually, SoFi, which is, to Sean's point about the innovation in the space, SoFi, one of the things they do is if they have your mortgage and you lose your job, they help you find another job, specifically because of that issue. So they actually have a job location function within the mortgage unit.
Wow. Have to think about that one.
I think to your point, though, there's a ton of unintended consequences. You know, I sometimes joke that it started with Nordstrom, right? This idea that you can just walk in and return anything. And it's becoming pretty widespread, you know. Kim over here, my support person, like occasionally has to deal with somebody who just thinks because they say they can get whatever they want. And, you know, I think that's it's an interesting thing, right? Maybe, you know, whether it's customer service or whatever, maybe we should be saying no to people who are doing the wrong things and yes, more yeses to the people that are doing the right things. And
wow. I need a drink.
But I mean, really, from customer service to all this stuff, we're building in this idea that you don't need to, you know, follow whatever's right. You don't need to make your payment. You don't need to, and there shouldn't be consequences, and we should protect you. I think there's big long-term unintended consequences of where society goes and where society devolves because of that. Back up your point. I think we'd be in a very different financial position had we not let a lot of people sit in their houses and not make their payment. We still have Nevada, which has seen a big increase in price. They have 10.6. They have the highest negative equity in the nation. And they basically made foreclosing illegal, right? They changed the laws and said, you know, robo-signing, at the end of the day, we're going to put you in jail if you robo-sign a loan. What person at the end of the day at any bank knows anything about the loan? The computer knows everything about the loan. Are we really going to make somebody sign off? Well, there's no personal bankers anymore. Nope. And so we're going to put you in jail if you robo-sign? I mean, yeah, we've gone a little off the reservation.
No, it's okay. No, it's fine. You're known for that.
Yeah, Bruce doesn't look at the watch anymore. He looks at his phone. I mean,
you know. Yeah, oh, high-tech Bruce, okay. Any tax law changes any of you think are going to probably be implemented, and what would their impact be on real estate?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
It's the only good thing I could potentially... Well, no, never mind. It's the one piece I'm looking forward to out of this administration.
Is
a tax? Some tax relief, personally.
Okay.
Not necessarily saying, you know, it's the, whatever, but...
Okay. So you think that, I mean, is that going to happen? Well, that, you think that's, I'm hoping it happens too, of course.
So personal opinion, we get relief and not reform. And that's a sad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think it'll put us in worse shape long term. Help my pocketbook short term. I think that we may, if we get anything, that's what we'll get. We won't get, you know, something that fundamentally puts us back on track. And, you know, this debt thing we've got is a permanent thing. It's, you know, you talked about quantitative uneasing. Yeah,
$40 trillion, yeah, that's pretty much.
Yeah, you know, talked about quantitative uneasing. That's going to last months until the next recession, and then we're going to go back the other way.
The Norris Group would like to thank the following gold partners. First Lending Solutions, Guaranteed Rate and Nathan Chiboya, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, LA South RIA, Michael Ryan, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, San Francisco Bay Real Estate Networking Summit, Sunoco, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, Think Realty, U Direct IRA Services, West and South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See iSurvivedRealEstate.com for event information.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.